This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 6:05 in the evening. You're with Lynn and Ayman, and we're starting this hour by discussing the approach to punishing those who are guilty of driving under the influence of alcohol or drugs. This is after Transport Minister Anthony Loke revealed that the government has agreed in principle to tighten existing laws on DUI offences.
So the plan is to review several sections under the Road Transport Act 1987 and table the amendments during the parliamentary sitting in June or July. So these sections relate to, among other things, driving under the influence of alcohol or drugs, which results in death or injury, reckless and dangerous driving, which causes death, and also the level of blood alcohol content, which is currently not in line with international standards that have been set by the World Health Organization.
However, with that said, some lawyers have called for the government to take a more holistic approach rather than just going with, you know, punitive measures right away. And this includes making sure that hotels, bars and restaurants don't sell alcohol to patrons who are already highly intoxicated, as well as working to improve on enforcement.
Yeah, because I think the penalties are already in place. Does on its surface does seem quite strong already. I mean, the more money we have to pay and the jail term as well. The holistic approach to it, I think, will be equally as important, because I'm just trying to think, like, so everyone knows drunk driving is bad, right? So I've never been in an environment where, you know, I hang out with friends in a bar, the person is drunk. So how does that train of thought occur where you know drunk driving is wrong, yet at the end of the day you think, like, you know what, it's okay, I'll do it anyways. I'm just trying to understand how that happens.
I think it's a pretty simple answer, to be honest. I think that a lot of it lies in most people not being the best judges of whether or not they are drunk. Everybody knows drunk driving is wrong. Everybody knows that if you have been drinking, things like your reflexes are going to be slowed down, just all these important things that you need in order to be a good driver. Not as if at the best of times, at the most sober of times, our driving as a whole in terms of Malaysia is that great anyway. So you do know, I think logically, that you have to be careful. But we also know that I think a lot of us probably overestimate how good we are as drivers anyway. You know, on an average day, it's never our fault. It's always the other car's fault. And then I think when you've been drinking, that is compounded by the fact that you may or may not recognize that you are intoxicated. So for you, it's like, no, as far as I'm concerned, I still feel fine. Ergo, I can take the 10-minute drive to go home. And so I think that there does seem to be this need for communication, and I think communication and enforcement on multiple fronts. I think the idea that hotels, bars and restaurants not sell alcohol to patrons who are already highly intoxicated is a good one. I think most, a lot of other countries also have cutoff points at which is where people will stop serving alcohol, especially if you started, you know, behaving in an unruly fashion. But it is difficult. And even that is still quite a personal bar, right? You're depending on the person who's actually selling the alcohol to make that call.
So, yeah, so it's more like a self-regulation kind of thing where it's based on your own judgment. But I'm guessing that, you know, not everyone has that breath device to sort of measure whether you are drunk or not.
A breathalyzer.
Breathalyzer, yeah. So that can give like a quantitative kind of proof that, you know,
nobody
you
carries those around.
So I'm just thinking like other policies. So for example, in I think in many countries, they don't allow the sale of alcohol like late at night or in the evening. But I think in terms of ASEAN, Malaysia is third after Thailand and another country. So Thailand has that law in place as well. Yet a lot of the fatal road accidents are caused by people who were intoxicated. So even that kind of policy may not necessarily be as effective as one would hope.
I wonder whether strengthening the laws is also meant to just send out a stronger message to say that, hey, this is something that we are aware is a problem, and this is something that we are working working to address. Because like you said, the laws, such as they are there. I think the main discrepancy is that we are not aligned to what the World Health Organization, is it the World Health Organization? To what they would consider that intoxication cutoff point. So they are 50 milligrams, right? 50 milligrams.
50 milligrams per 100.
Yes, and we are at 80. Mm-hmm. So there is that 30 milligram difference in terms of whether or not you've crossed the threshold into you not only shouldn't drive, but cannot drive. Legally, you cannot drive. So I think working to align that is a good thing. I don't think anybody would necessarily be opposed to stronger laws against something like driving under the influence, because we all know that that's an important element of public safety. Mm-hmm. And I do think that the question then is on the other side, on the side of drinkers and people who are providing people with alcohol, what kind of enforcement do we need there? I think that's really where the question is. So if you have thoughts on this, you can call us at 7733 2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. We're crossing over in the meantime to Ahmad Farhan Mohamed Sadullah, Professor of Transportation Engineering at University Science Malaysia. Prof, thank you so much for joining us. So do you think that having heavier penalties is key to reducing the incidence of drunk driving?
Nope, I don't think so, because I think penalty are laws. Laws has been there, actually. I mean, we are always good at coming up with new laws, but I think the key is still enforcement. And I think we need to look into how we can enforce all existing laws better. But for driving under influence of alcohol, I think that there is a bigger problem. We have sort of not highlighted this as a problem, or we feel Malaysia does not have a problem. And I think the data has also not shown the true reflection of the magnitude of the problem until somebody has been killed, like recently. So I think we need to relook at how we approach this offense and reposition it as something that is very serious.
And why are we not viewing drunk driving as a serious matter, as you put it? Is it because we're lumping together the various kinds of accidents, or what's the reason here?
No. I think we have been, under the police report, we have the cause of accident as an indicator. But I think from what I understand, we may not have procedures that capture all the cases. And if we stop anybody, it is not a normal practice for us to check for their state of mind or state condition, whether they are drunk or not. You know, unlike in other countries, they will have a protocol that will ensure they are being, you know, they will identify drunk drivers immediately. But in Malaysia, I don't think we do that. So it becomes like by chance we will discover somebody is drunk. But I was told that the post-mortem, if there are cases of death, we will actually take the blood of the victim. But again, whether do we assess the condition of other drivers, you know? So it, to me, is the whole protocol that we use in the country. And I think it may be because we don't feel, because Malaysian being a Muslim country and so on, we don't feel that drinking driving is a big problem. But I think that's not true anymore. We need to, as I said just now, we need to reposition it so that it is considered as one of the major and the most serious offence regarding road safety.
So one part of the law that's been brought up, and we mentioned it earlier as well, is the permitted alcohol content in the driver's blood. Malaysia has a higher limit compared to the World Health Organization's guidelines. Could you walk us through how these limits are set, given that people react differently to different amounts of alcohol?
Yeah, exactly. I think every country will basically gauge it on their the norm or the mean. In statistical terms, the mean that they perhaps gather from data that they have. The question is whether we have enough data or not to know what is the Malaysian mean. And I know from my own observation and perhaps acquaintance with police, we don't have enough data on this. So usually it is to put a limit where it will be effective and to prevent drinking drivers to be off the road as much as possible. So they will decide on the threshold to achieve that. But for us, we do not know. You know, for perhaps for Malaysians who are not known to be a drinking society, or even the differences between the culture and the race may have different reflection. We really do not know what is the limit. I obviously do not know, but I'm not sure whether anybody can tell us what is the mean of the amount of alcohol that we have in the blood of those who have been caught or those who have been stopped for drinking driving, you know. So it's not as easy as that. But I think that's how countries determine their limits.
Okay, so several lawyers were quoted by Free Malaysia Today calling for a more holistic approach to this rather than focusing on just punitive measures. So an example that we mentioned earlier is making sure that bars and restaurants do not sell alcohol to patrons who are already highly intoxicated. So besides enforcement, do you think holistic measures like this would help as well?
Yeah, definitely. But I think we need to go even beyond that. Drinking driving is about self-responsibility. And I think whatever that we do should not only tackle drinking driving, but also recklessness in driving, because that is also about self-responsibility. So I think roads will be safer when people are more responsible. And I think this is why we see countries that are leading in road safety, especially from the West or from the developed countries. It has a very positive correlation to a society that is having high self-responsibility or responsible citizens, as they say it, you know. Because when you are responsible, you know that you will not take risks. You know that you should not create risk to others. And these are all best done through self-regulation. You know, how much amount of enforcement that the enforcing agency wants to do, they can never catch up, you know, because the ratio between enforcement people and the public is too wide. So I think I agree it should be a holistic approach, but it cannot be just on the surface. It has to touch the root of the problem, which is how do we change the society, perhaps, you know, not in a short term, but a longer term requiring maybe several generations. But we need to change the attitude of our Malaysians to be more responsible. And I think that is the root of the problem. And until and unless we solve that problem, not only drinking driving, but other problems associated to road safety will continue to prevail. And we just see road safety problems continue to be our problem in the future.
So, Prof, we often talk about increasing civic-mindedness, this sense of responsibility in people. And I suppose we always ask this as well, how can this be done? I mean, is it something that needs to be instilled in drivers from the time that they learn how to drive?
Yeah, I think it requires a collective effort. It has to be stated as a problem of the country. And whenever we position a plan, like for now, the current government has positioned the shared prosperity plan, and in line with the sustainable development goal, for example, we should tackle this, because it's not only in road safety. When responsible citizens are also in crime, are also in how we, the future of family, you know, these are all perhaps coming from the same root problem. So I think we have to study where we have gone wrong, and then we need to find ways on how we can start changing. Of course, in the short term, it could be enforcement, but in the long term, it should be changing the attitude, the values, the value system has to be looked at, how we promote it at preschool, the role of parents. You know, all this requires research. So again, it's a big effort, but the longer we delay this, I think we are just trying to solve problems on the surface. For example, I mean, I keep seeing, you know, in our discussion before, the problems of motorcyclists, you know, school children or youngsters without license riding motorcycle and not wearing helmet. I mean, these are of course can be attributed to the responsibility of the parents, you know. So in order to change the whole society, and that's definitely not easy. But we have seen other countries succeeding doing it. So I think if we are serious about solving and making sure that our country remains sustainable and remain a pleasant place and a safe place in the future, we need to start somewhere, you know. So I think I agree with the claim. It has to be holistic, but it has to even be beyond just surface and cosmetic solutions. We need to really, it's time for us to go into the root of the problem.
Prof, thank you so much for speaking to us. That was Ahmad Farhan Mohamed Sadullah, Professor of Transportation Engineering at University Science Malaysia, talking about, I suppose, how to try to deal with the very root issue that causes this issue to begin with, which is, of course, driving under the influence. So we've been asking you for your thoughts and how to cope with it, because on the one hand, you've got the transport minister basically saying we're going to strengthen the laws. On the other side, you have lawyers coming back and saying, well, yeah, that's fine, but also we need to look at it in a more holistic fashion and try to address it on multiple fronts.
Yeah, so these include like encouraging bar operators and hotels and restaurants to stop selling alcohol to people who are obviously very intoxicated, and also enhancing enforcement as well. So it's the idea that, you know, it's a multi-pronged approach rather than just strengthening the laws.
So Mike says, for example, what laws? We don't need any more laws. We need effective enforcement. Malaysia has great laws, but bad enforcement.
And that is one of the key gaps that the lawyers have brought up. Like, you know, we have the laws, but enforcement is still lacking. So that is one of the areas that really needs to be paid attention to. Because, yeah, no matter how many laws you have, if you don't enforce it, then it's not going to help at all.
We also have Rini on the line with us. Rini, good evening. What are your thoughts?
Hello, hi. I want to speak from a different perspective. I was thinking that alcohol is not forced to take alcohol. It's your choice. Because when you are taking alcohol, you still realize that you are making the choice of taking it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it comes back to the preference, and also it comes back to the issue of why do people take alcohol in the first place? So if you take alcohol and you are not responsible, it's a double whammy. It's like you're doing a disjustice for other people. So I think our society should react differently in this situation, where the first thing is we are not going to ban alcohol. However, there must be a certain rule that, you know, because alcohol is available everywhere. So how do you educate our youngsters or our elders on our citizens to avoid it? So if somebody is taking it, it's their choice of taking it. But to be responsible after you're taking the alcohol is another issue, however. So I just throw the line, and hopefully somebody outside can think not just as a regulator, but also as a normal person on the road. Because we are having this hazard that more and more people are being irresponsible. If you are taking alcohol and you sleep afterwards, it's okay, because you do not making other people nuisance. I mean, to make other people die just because you are taking irresponsible choice. So I hope that people would really think, because when you take alcohol, they will be hazard to other people if you are driving. If you are not, then it's your personal choice. Yeah.
Rini, thank you so much for calling. And this idea of responsibility, I think, goes back to what we were talking about with that civic mindedness, right? With understanding that, and this is, I think, a general road problem. You're sharing the road. Your safety affects the safety of others on the road. And if you are taking something that is going to infringe on your ability to be safe, then don't drive.
But then from what you explained earlier, Lynn, your judgment is really clouded by your intoxication, right? So the first point of stopping it from happening is in that location itself. I don't know if there are any kind of measures that the bar or restaurant operators can sort of utilized to make sure that, you know, people who are leaving in the good enough state of mind to you know, drive. If otherwise, perhaps make it easier for them to hire a Grab or a taxi or whatever, or allow them to leave their cars safely so that they can pursue other ways of going back home and coming back the next day. I don't know.
You know, all it comes down to, I think, is the culture of having a designated driver. If you have a designated driver, you're basically fine. So I think it's about learning that idea of, I'm not, if I know that tonight I am going to a spot where I'm going to be drinking, then I don't drive, right? I think to your point about, you know, making it easy to take Grab and making it safe to park your car, that really comes down to a personal choice. To go back to Rini's point, if you know that you're going somewhere, because it's not as if you ended up there like by surprise, more often than not, you know in advance what you're going to be doing. And that's why I think you increasingly see people arriving more and more and leaving more and more by ride hailing or by cab or in as part of a carpool, right? But then you come to issues surrounding personal safety. But again, this is all comes down to personal choice.
Yeah, I agree. But I know, because obviously some people still don't have a designated driver. They come in thinking that, oh, I'll be all right. I know I'm going to drink tonight, but I'll be all right at the end of the day. I'm just going to have like one or two glasses or whatever. So there's still that gap in terms of being prepared for the event that you get drunk and you have to drive back.
So Ling says, drunk driving should always be the responsibility of the person behind the wheel and not the bar or the pub. It's ridiculous to ask a bartender to take responsibility for a customer's habit of, you know, drinking and driving. It would be better to cancel someone's driver's license in order to deter this. If there's a fatal accident, then the driver should be charged with manslaughter.
You know, my former housemate was involved in an accident, right? A drunk driver collided with her car. And while the police the test on him was only done like the next day, or the drunk driver was only done the next day. And by that time, obviously, you know, the proof of it was not existent anymore. So there is still that gap in terms of, you know, making sure that enforcement is quick and you know, and precise, so that, you know, can avoid these problems.
So if you'd like to weigh in, you can call us at 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. We're going to be back after the 6:30 news. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.